Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Welcome. You landed at the radio show that finds innovators that can inspire you into action with sustainable ideas that make economic sense. Bob Kessler, executive producer, will tell us more about today's guests.
Robert, biomimicry is a big area of design. That's kind of where design imitates animals and plants and whatever. There are some really interesting, fascinating biomimicry design award winners from the Biomimicry Institute, so we'll check in with them. Also, you were out test driving a Tesla race car, is that correct?
I did. It was at the Autobahn. It was so much fun, Bob.
The Autobahn in Germany?
No, in Joliet, Illinois. It's a private race club that allows you to race around the track.
Oh, amazing. Okay, well, we have some other green automotive news, and I'm sure you'll tell us more about your test driver, the Tesla, when we check in with Tom Appel of Consumer Guide Automotive.
And that's all coming up on this edition of Green Sense. Biomimicry, which is the practice of emulating nature, is a hot area when it comes to innovation. The idea is to create products, processes, and policies well adapted to life on Earth over the long haul. The Biomimicry Institute supports innovators who are working in this way, and we're joined by Megan Schuchnecht, the Institute's Director of Design Challenges. Megan, welcome back to Green Sense.
Thanks so much for having me.
You recently announced the winner of your latest design challenge, and we'll get into who won shortly, but tell us about the competition. How long has it been going on, and what kinds of innovation applications did you receive?
We've been running design challenges at the Institute almost since our inception 11 years ago. But 4 years ago, we were able to add another component, which was supporting bringing designs out of the design stage and towards commercialization, down the path towards commercialization.
And this year's winner is Nucleario, which was created to help crews in the Brazilian rainforest plant more trees in less time. First, where'd they get that name? And second, explain how it works and why they were selected as the winner.
I think they got, I've never actually asked them that question of where they got the name, but I think Nucleario might mean like a nucleus. And so their idea is to support seedlings as they develop in the early stages of their growth. So right now in Brazil, when they plant on hilly topography and they need to reforest these hard to reach areas, there are a lot of constraints. So they require a lot of labor to keep invasive grasses down, to keep leaf cutter ants from destroying the seedlings. And they also have to use a lot of insecticides and fungicides to keep the plants healthy. So the Nucleario is intended to reduce all of the maintenance costs associated with reforestation while addressing all of those problems of needing moisture, promoting biodiversity, and preventing invasive species from killing off the seedlings.
Why is this a good example of biomimicry?
There's a lot of biomimetic functionality embedded in the Nucleario. So they took lessons from epiphytes, which are some of which are very good at collecting water in the rainforest, given their design. And so the Nucleario design is also designed to collect water. They looked at how forest leaf litter helps protect seedlings and also provide nutrients for those seedlings. And so they're mimicking some of the functionality that's found in leaf litter in order to keep the seedlings healthy. And then they also looked at ant characteristics and how ants move and use some of those lessons in designing the Nucleario to protect from ants being able to get at the seedlings.
Nucleario was just one of six teams that were finalists. What about the other ones that did not become a winner? What will those teams do?
Mm-hmm. Well, our second place winner was called BioThermoSmart, and they were looking at the problem of waste heat in buildings. And we have huge amounts of waste heat in our buildings, and you don't see that kind of waste happening in the rest of the natural world. And they took a deep look at the patterns in nature and how nature manages heat, and particularly how nature cools in the body and in warm environments. And they realized that a common pattern was that nature uses the circulatory system or a series of pipes or fluid-filled chambers to help manage and transfer heat as necessary. And so they designed a patch system that could be applied in server rooms to the actual servers, which of course are generate a lot of heat. And then the idea is that that heat will be moved from places where it's not needed in the server's room to places in the building where more heat could be utilized, especially during colder climatic conditions. We also have a team based in Oakland, California, called RootLink. And they took a little bit of a different approach. They were really looking at how soil microorganisms distribute nutrients and help support a broader ecosystem. And they applied what they learned from these decentralized distributed networks to come up with a system that links different components of the food system. So their idea is to link community kitchens with farmers, with consumers, and provide healthy, culturally appropriate, easy to access meals for those that want them.
Tell us a little bit about how the competition has impacted past winners. Have past winners used it to start a company? Did they use the accolades and the promotion to get a job, or did they continue on with education?
Yeah, I would say all of the above. So some of our earliest winners, there's a team that was called Hexagrow Urban Farming, which is based out of Italy, and they were really looking at designing systems for healthy urban food production with minimal inputs. And they just secured their first round of funding, so we're very proud of them and excited that they're going on to continue. We have a couple other teams out of Europe from our first cohort. One was called the Mangrove Still, and another was called Biocultivator. And these were all out of our food systems challenge, so all of these are food system-related solutions. But Mangrove Still's technology was really designed to help desalinate seawater at a low cost, and then use that desalinated seawater to restore soils. And the biocultivator is a balcony cultivator system that particularly geared at the Eastern European market, where it was common to do gardening, but lots of people are moving to cities and they may not have space to garden, but they can still cultivate a small garden on their balcony through the biocultivator. And both of those teams are part of a European Union grant. I believe it's a $10 million euro grant, and then a portion of that grant is being used to support our team's biocultivator and Mangrove Still in a pilot project.
My guest is Megan Shuckneck, Director of Design Challenges with the Biomimicry Institute, and we're talking about their recent competition. Megan, let's look at some of the technologies that came out of that and how they imitate nature. Let's first start with Refresh, a device that can actively remove particulate matter from the air. Boy, they need that in China.
Yes. And in Taiwan, where this particular team is from, I think it can be hard for us in the United States to realize what a problem air pollution is in the world. Although when, you know, there's currently fires in parts of the United States, and then we have a little more inkling of what it's like to be breathing polluted air like that. But this team developed a device to remove particulate matter from the air, especially the most harmful, the smallest particles, PM2.5, in order to clean the air. And they took some lessons from the leaves of plants that have trichomes on their surface, these tiny little hairs, which can trap particulate matter when it attaches to the leaf's surface. And then when rain comes down, it dissolves that. Rain acts as a solvent and then dissolves the particulates that are on the leaf surface, removing it from the air. They also took inspiration from filter feeding fish and their gill rakers in order to trap particulates within the device itself.
And I said that wrong. The actual name of the company is, or the technology is, Refish, not Refresh. So that makes sense. Let's talk about Cooltiva, which is also a cooling system.
Mm-hmm. So Cooltiva is based in Colombia, and of course they're feeling the impacts of climate change there. It's in a tropical environment. They already face lots of warm, humid days, and the temperature is only rising in that region. And they're specifically beginning by looking in Barranquilla, which is on the Caribbean coast. And so their system takes advantage of the wind and the sun to regulate temperatures inside city residences using minimal energy. So the idea is to have a cooling system that doesn't require energy inputs and certainly doesn't require air conditioning. And so they looked at, they took a systemic look at natural strategies and how different organisms are able to protect different organisms and different ecosystems regulate heat. And so they took some of their inspiration from rose-shaped plants like the fralejón, it's called, which captures and directs water with their funnel shape and channels, and then that is used for cooling. And they also mimic the process of evapotranspiration to reduce the temperature of the incoming air using only water.
Biomimicry makes so much sense. Do you think one day about everything we use will have biomimicry design in it in some form?
I certainly hope so. We know that's an aspirational goal, but it only makes sense that by looking to nature, can we also create designs and solutions that will be more in harmony with the natural environment. So we like to say that we're a young species. Humans have only been on the planet for around 2,000 years. Other organisms have been here much longer. And so we're a young species. We're still learning, and we certainly hope that we can speed up the process of becoming more well adapted to the planet by observing the organisms and the elders that have come before us.
How do you see your competition changing over time?
Well, we partner with the Racy Anderson Foundation to run this competition, and the Racy Anderson Foundation supports businesses that do well by doing good, businesses with a purpose, which is very much in the vein of Racy Anderson, who was the CEO of Interface, a global carpet company, and used biomimicry to really reduce his company's footprint on the earth. So we are interested in the commercialization aspect and getting more case studies out there that show that biomimicry is a radical way to innovate. And so in addition to taking recipients from our Biomimicry Global Design Challenge into the Launchpad competition, which is the entrepreneurship element, we've also opened up the competition to existing startups that have nature-inspired designs. So we have a direct application process, as well as bringing young designers from our challenge competition into the entrepreneurship realm. So that's one change that we're making going forward.
Well, Megan, thanks for joining us again and giving us an update on your winners, and we'll look forward to talking to you next year.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, Robert.
That's Megan Shuknick, the Biomimicry Institute's Director of Design Challenges. You can find out more at biomimicry.org. This is Robert Colangelo, and you're listening to GreenSense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
It's time for the Guru of Gears. He's known around here as Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He joins us now for our Green Automotive News. Tom, welcome to Green Sense.
Well, thank you.
How was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was good. My kid was home from college. We had a great time.
Did you eat a lot of turkey?
You know, I'm vegetarian, so I did not have turkey, but I watched a lot of happy people eat turkey.
Ah, that's good to know. I did not know you were a vegetarian after all these years. Is that something
new?
Yeah,
no meat. No. I've been doing it since 1990.
Oh, my gosh. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, did you drive any cars during Thanksgiving that you wanted to talk about, or was it more of a relaxing holiday?
For Thanksgiving, I drove the Ford Expedition Max, which is the long wheelbase version of the Expedition. And it's one of those vehicles that people look at and they think, well, huge gas guzzler. But actually, it uses Ford's EcoBoost V6 engine and a new 10-speed automatic transmission. And it's good for something like 17 to 18 miles per gallon in regular driving, which is amazingly efficient compared to that vehicle just 5-10 years ago.
Well, if you did eat turkey, you could probably fit a lot of turkeys in the back there, couldn't you?
hundreds of turkeys.
Well, let's get into our topics today. You know, the first is connected cars and their emerging challenges. Did you know, Tom, that, you know, in the past, it was all about pistons and horsepowers, but now software and computer power is becoming just as much relevant as the pistons and horsepower once were. And it's complicated. If you're not good with technology, all this stuff on cars can be a bit of a challenge. So maybe you could pontificate and shed some light on your thoughts on the automotive ecosystem.
Yeah, the connected car concept is super interesting, and the term is very broadly used. I think when we say connected cars, people probably think about Tesla and how they rather famously do and perform updates over the air to some of their vehicles. Or we might go further back and think about General Motors and their OnStar telematics system. And those are both early examples of connected, but the connected that's coming down the road and going to hit us very quickly is far more involved, far more comprehensive, and possibly far more an intrusion on our privacy. When we say connected, there's a few ways that a car can be connected. It can be connected to the road or to the infrastructure, and that'll be good for autonomous vehicles or for charging when eventually in-road charging is available. It can be connected to the manufacturer for things like software updates or recalls. It can also be connected to other cars, which will be an autonomous function. But additionally, with things like Alexa showing up in cars, your car is just connected to the internet as well.
Well, when I think of connectivity, I think of additional functionality such as hands-free calling, navigation, audio streaming. But I also think of security concerns. You know, can people break into my car? Can they break into all my data? Any thoughts on any of those issues? Would you consider those connectivity?
Yeah, that's definitely connectivity, and they definitely expose certain elements of our private information and our security, I think, to the public. One of the interesting things is that after some very famous examples of people hijacking into a car, it turns out that this is very difficult to do and not a common thing. It's not very easy for one individual to steal another individual's car or steal their data. What's more likely to happen is that your car, your information, and the information that you generate with your car is going to be exposed in the same way that we're exposed when we use our credit cards from a particular bank or at a certain retailer when they have a security breach. What's interesting about connected cars, and specifically autonomous cars, is that these vehicles are going to know a considerable amount of information about us, who we call, what we do from our car, where we're traveling, and a lot about the roads and neighborhoods around us. This is information that you could argue is our own and it's private, but it's probably going to be shared whether or not we're willing to do so.
Amazing. One thing I've heard, Tom, and I haven't fact-checked it, was that car thefts have gone down, partially because it's so hard to break in cars with all this new technology, but carjacking's gone way up. Have you heard anything to corroborate that?
Yeah, I've heard that exact thing. And in Chicago, for example, carjackings are way up. But yeah, I think reported overall car thefts are down because cars are very difficult to steal. If you don't have the key, it's not like you can hotwire a car underneath the steering wheel anymore.
Well, let's move on to another topic. I hear Toyota has got some interesting technology that they're about to launch that's going to increase fuel efficiency.
Yeah, this is one of those great little things where it's high tech, low tech in a very wonderful sense, because it's always nice to hear about engineers going back to the drawing board and sort of reexamining how they do things. For 2019, for 2019, Toyota launched the Corolla hatchback, which is an all-new vehicle for them on the new Toyota, what do they call it? Toyota's new global architecture, but it's a very nice little car. But one of the most interesting features of the car is the Dynamic Force engine. Now, that sort of branding sounds like Hemi or something like that, but it's actually a two-liter engine that engineers went back and just re-examined everything of, and it's little things like valve angles and other parts of the car that they could make lightweight. But this engine is 41% efficient in a hybrid or 40% efficient installed in a non-hybrid vehicle. And that's an amazing thing. That means that's energy that's not being converted and wasted as heat. And this compares to something like numbers in the high 20s for most engines.
That's remarkable. What type of miles per gallon do you think you'll see out of an engine like this?
Consumer Guide recently tested a Corolla XSE, which is the sporty version of the Corolla. Fun car. It's EPA rated at 30 city, 38 highway. We saw about 35 mpg in regular driving, which is really strong for a non-hybrid vehicle. But the best part is it's fun to drive. The engine revs freely. It sounds good. Generally kind of a playful, spunky, small engine.
So when you said that the engineers went back to school to do some old school engineering, embellish upon that and explain what that means.
Yeah, there's a couple of fun things that they did. This is a little technical, but they played with the valve angles. And this is, you know, the valves in the heads of a car have been the same for a number of years. But they've aligned the valve angle so that air enters into the cylinder in such a way that it incurs the air to tumble quickly in the cylinder, that allows for quicker and more efficient combustion. They also use a variable rate oil pump, so the oil pump isn't always pumping as strong as it could be all the time. The water pump is electric now instead of mechanical, so that can be turned on or off as needed. Little things like that. It's little stuff. They didn't go hybrid. There's no electrical assist of any sort. It's just old school efficiency design, and it's cool to see.
So Tom, 35 miles per gallon sounds great, but why can't we start to see 50 miles per gallon or 70 like you start to see in Europe?
Well, you see those in Europe in smaller engines and smaller cars. Also, the city cycle that they use in Europe slightly exaggerates the fuel economy relative to the EPA cycle. So the numbers are a little bit different, but European drivers are willing to accept engines in the 1.2-liter range, 1.5-liter range, and Americans don't do that. We really like torque. We really like cars that are quick off the line, and that's unfortunately one of the reasons that we just use a little bit more gas than the rest of the world.
Well, I want to give a little shout-out to the Autobahn in Joliet. That's a private race course. I was able to test drive a Tesla PD100S on the track. And I've got to tell you, what an amazing experience. It accelerates 0 to 60 in 2.7 seconds. And with the regenerative brakes, you can go into turns and quickly accelerate out. It was a phenomenal experience. And, you know, the electric car is definitely going to be proliferating, I think, out on the roadway. Have you ever had a chance to do that, Tom, to go up to the Autobahn?
I've been out to the Autobahn a lot of times. Our trade association, the Midwest Automotive Media Association, has a nice relationship with the Autobahn, and it's a beautiful country club slash race course, and they do a great job out there. Yeah, and we've used their track. It's a wonderful facility.
Have you ever got a chance to drive the Teslas out there?
I have never driven a Tesla on the track or at the Autobahn. I have driven a Tesla-provided Model X, which is the crossover, in Chicago traffic, and I found that vehicle to be an absolute delight to drive. Maybe a little firm riding, but insanely fast. The acceleration is mind-boggling.
Well, we'll have to go test drive some cars together out there, because it's a great experience, and as we know, a lot of the technologies on the track trickle down to the consumer car, and so it's a great place to have some fun and learn a little bit about the cars.
I would love to do that.
Well, Tom, I'm glad you had a great Thanksgiving. We got to get ready for Christmas is coming up shortly, and we'll be talking to you in a couple of weeks.
Looking forward to it.
That's Tom Appel, Consumer Guide Automotive Publisher, with us for our Green Automotive News. Read his articles, reviews, and more at consumerguide.com. Subscribe to the Green Sense Radio podcast at greensensefarms.com. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Green Sense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
GreenSense Radio is brought to you by GreenSense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
GreenSense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright GreenSense Farms, all rights reserved.